This is the naked city, the city within the city, like an ugly wound, laid raw. The naked city.
It's time for another rambunctious, mind-popping, heart-stopping, lobe-lopping, huge and whopping edition of The Naked City, of course, brought to you by Sydney Film School. Challenge the status quo, people. SydneyFilmSchool.com. Now join us for the next riveting 2 hours as we plunge headlong into a cornucopia of subterranea. You know there are millions of stories in this naked city, but today we've only got time for a few of them. And now your hosts, Miss Death, Coffin Ed, and of course myself, if I don't have a little heart attack here, J-Cats.
Oh yes, a beautiful but interesting week. Interesting is not the word, Coffin Ed. How are you?
Oh, J-Cats, just so much happened this week. It was incredible, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable. It was a deluge. Miss Death, you look absolutely stunningly beautiful this morning.
You say that every week.
Well, I mean it.
Every week.
Yeah, you're on The Naked City, folks. We've got so much to talk about. We've actually got some great guests coming in, Miss Death. What's wrong?
I don't know. This is not playing.
All right, all right. You can sort that out in just a second. Tell us about the guest, Miss Death, the director and producer of Big Dreams.
At 10:30 we've got the director,
Big Dreamers,
Camille Harden, and the producer, John Fink, are coming in to speak to us about Big Dreamers, which is a documentary on roadside Australia, all the big things that are on there, like the big pineapple, the big lobster, the merino sheep, the big potato.
But specifically it's about the big gumboot at Tully.
That's right, with a giant frog climbing up the side of it.
Yeah,
it's
what
the
a golden story.
Gumboot, yes. So they'll be coming in to speak to us.
That's one of the sweet things that happened this week. There's a lot of disturbing things, and there's also the incredible apology to the Indigenous people. And, you know, all of us feel in our heart it should be much, much more than just an apology.
Clearly not all of us.
But it's frightening to see the right-wing backlash out there was shocking.
Is it right-wing backlash or just a backlash?
It is a backlash
of ignorant people.
Stupidity, really. And I think one of the worst perpetrators of that was Channel 9. I mean,
I'm sure that
current affairs program was the cheapest shot I've ever seen in my life and absolutely disgusting.
Well, what do you expect when they have stories like trolley crashing into cars and stuff in the car park? I mean, please.
So you have this demonised image now of an Indigenous person with a slab of beer on their shoulder.
Oh, how pathetic.
That's evil, right? Imagine a white person with a slab of beer on their shoulder.
How many? I mean,
it's great. They're going to the cricket, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we should just create a counterpoint. I mean, how many white people could have been photographed with that slab of beer and demonised? But they couldn't be demonised because, I mean, it's stuck in our head. It's some sort of bad conditioning gone wrong.
It is.
The other freaky thing that really scared me is the use of sonic warfare by the Australian Police Department, especially
it's the
New
Council.
It's the Council. Rockdale. The Council are actually pulling out sonic warfare weapons. Tell me about
the
it, Ms.
Rockdale Depp. Council. Are trying
this
to
is
keep
at Brighton Le Sands.
They're Brighton Le Sands. They're trying to keep the Carhoons out of the area.
Oh, God, they own the area. They live
now,
in the area.
They were playing Barry Manilow records.
Yes, they were.
About 6 months ago.
Yeah, and that
and
helped
opera
for
and
a little
like
bit.
That, yeah.
But you're kidding me. They were actually doing that.
Yeah, and it worked for a while, but then it sort of went pear-shaped, I think.
Well, explain to me how you use Barry Manilow to actually...
They had speakers along, you know...
Greeks don't like Barry Manilow.
They were playing Barry Manilow very loud. You know, I think they were also playing opera and stuff like that. Anything that young kids wouldn't like.
Opera, as long as it's Maria Callas, but they weren't playing Maria Callas.
But no one's explained to us, and nor do we are we aware that the council has access to sonic warfare weapons.
Well,
but tell us about the mosquito.
Incidentally, I do the same thing at home when I want to get rid of cockroaches in the kitchen. I put on the Veronicas really loud.
Okay, well, cockroaches are a little bit different. What they're trying to do is actually keep all the Carhoons out of the area. So they emit a sonic frequency that only affects people 25 and under.
Oh, what crap.
Well, no, there is, apparently, because there's ringtones that only kids can hear. Well, here's the problem.
What about fetuses in the womb?
Well, what about young children? What about young people that are there that aren't Carhoons? I mean, usually it's the 25 and under that are your most, you know,
and
have got all this disposable income that are going to go and sit in restaurants and sit in coffee shops.
Mm. What's that frequency doing to bats, the animal kingdom?
Well, we don't care about the bats or the animal kingdom.
Obviously.
All we care about is that businesses run to maximum profit.
Now, what does the frequency actually, does it make you feel sick? Does it make you feel
uncomfortable? I think it's irritating. I think it's irritating. But what about if a family goes into the area that want to shop or sit in a coffee shop or sit in a restaurant? What happens to their kids that aren't Calhouns?
I just think this is, it's like,
I mean, there's less Calhouns than there are, you know, law-abiding kids.
You don't,
I mean,
think it's the Rockdale Council pulling somebody's leg, do you? I mean,
No.
Really?
It's no, they've actually deployed some of the
they're
most
doing it
frightening.
Because it's, and the businesses are right behind them because they believe, and probably rightly so, that families aren't going to go down, you know, frequent these establishments as much because when there's Calhounery.
I think we should try and get an interview with a local representative, the councillor. I want to know where this equipment has come from.
Well, where do you think it's come from, Mr. Military-Industrial Complex?
Well, all the anti-war rallies in the States was the first time they actually wheeled out sonic equipment onto the population there.
Well,
and, I mean, you know, sound can be an incredible weapon and a dangerous weapon at that. You can actually remove the paint off your walls with a sound gun.
Sure.
So you can burn straight through people. You can vibrate at their internal organs and make them nauseous. That was that Stones concert where everything went wrong.
Mm.
I don't know. I think it's frightening. And especially when we look back today, we're literally this week on the 30th anniversary of the Hilton bombing, a bombing that was our first supposed
terrorist
event, apart from the invasion of this country, which was a major terrorist event. But and that bombing, to this day, there are still so many unanswered questions. Well, it turned out to be our own security services, didn't it?
Let's just say it wasn't so much as a terror. Well, it was a terrorist bombing. It frightened people.
It killed people, Ms.
Yeah, it did do what it established to do, and it terrorised us. But the terrorists were not who we thought they were.
Okay. All right. Miss Death has got control again.
I need control. I need to be in control.
You slipped that one in on me.
Yeah. Yes, I did. I'm sorry. No, you weren't.
The Thor Criminals. That was the Hilton Bomber track there from their extraordinary series of albums that have been reissued on Chronological. Thank God the Thor Criminals exist. Double think. They're still out there performing occasionally as well. Those men are gods in a godless town.
And then we followed up with the amazing hybrid of Mick Jagger. You got the answers there from their Again album.
I never thought I'd hear you say that.
Yes, that's right, Joe Katz.
Yeah.
And look, during the week, the much vaunted premiere.
Vaunted is the world.
Vaunted
Vince Colosimo.
The much vaunted premiere of Channel 9's $13 million epic, which have been promoted.
$13 million?
Underbelly.
Could you see where the $13 million was in that production? I couldn't.
Well, I'm not too sure where it went, but of course, it was banned in Victoria because there's still a court case pending.
Oh, how pending has that
been
seems for
pointless,
decades?
Pointless these
absolutely.
Days. Apparently, there were 10,000 internet downloads of it. So, I mean, it's just absurd banning with the technology.
It was no blue murder, was it, Coffin?
Well, it was cartoon-like, I thought.
Oh, it was
so bad. And it was so, I mean, the writers had obviously spent too much time looking at The Sopranos because, I mean, it's just going to be an inevitable.
But an Australian Sopranos just doesn't ring true.
No.
You know, doesn't ring true.
Part of it was okay. Part of the acting was okay. Probably the best actor in it, Vince Colosimo, got knocked off in the... he played Alphonse Gangitano.
That's probably because he would have shown everybody else up.
Yeah, he was gone in the first episode.
I don't think I could even believe him, really.
But look, there were some weird things about it. For a start, and Channel 9 copped a lot of flack about this, they peppered it with ads during the first hour.
There well, some's got to pay for it.
Yeah. It was just a record number of ads. There was like 5 minutes of it, and then there'd be 10 ads, and then minutes and 10 ads.
Mm.
And they laid off in the second hour. They showed 2 hours to kick it off.
Right.
The other thing was this kind of weird, gratuitous nudity in it, which...
was pointless and didn't seem to make any sense.
Not for people who tuned in and wanted to see that sort
of
thing.
Well, that was about all they saw.
You know, I mean, that wasn't really
part of the story. Yeah, but we know gangsters and underworld, that's where that sort of thing happens.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't happen in normal homes. It happens just in that sort of underworld.
It happened in our home on Wednesday night, Mr.
Relax, yeah. We'll
the
go there later.
The strange thing with underbelly, of course, was Channel 7 got very excited today, tonight, because it was banned in Victoria. So they lined up an interview with Judy Moran, whose son and husband, of course, were both victims of the gangland wars.
Yeah.
And they had Judy Moran there.
It's very emotive.
With a glass of wine in her hand.
Oh, yeah.
And saying, get it right, Eddie. Get it right, Eddie, which, of course, was some kind of reference to Eddie at Channel 9.
Ah, right, okay, yeah. But he's gone now,
he's
hasn't
gone,
he?
Yeah. Yes, of
Channel 7's been quite sneaky in that regard, haven't they, with Ray Martin and all that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
The television
anyway,
wars.
Anyway, it might get better underbelly, but, I mean, it's a great story.
Listen, if it's not good to start with, it's not. It's like a relationship.
Yeah.
If it's stuffed in the beginning, it's not going to get better. It's just going to go downhill from there.
You
it's got to
so?
Be good in the beginning, and then there's, like, there's a bit of a downward slide after that. But if it's shitty to start with, it ain't going to get
I think
any
the
better.
ABC would have made a better job of
oh,
it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
I
absolutely.
Think the problem is, yeah, and it's amazing to see there's a review in the paper by Roger Rogerson. Can you believe that? They're actually paying that guy to review.
Careful what you say.
Yeah,
he knows
kneecaps,
where we live.
Kneecaps, yeah.
Roger's got a book coming out pretty soon, too.
I bet he has.
Remember when he was on the show, he said he'd never write his biography, but then...
Yeah, well...
Well, you don't believe someone like that, do you?
No, Miss Death, watch what you're saying.
Well,
yeah.
What do you mean, watch what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He said he wouldn't write one, and he's written one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I rest my case.
I just don't think there's much reality left in reality, and that's the problem these days, you know, trying to translate something like that to the screen. It was absolutely a pathetic attempt. Anyhow, enough of that.
Dear, oh dear.
All right, what's up next there, Miss Death?
I think we're going to go to...
Look, I never thought elephants would become a political football.
A leading news story, please.
But this week, of course, the controversy over Thong Dee, the young female elephant at Taronga Park Zoo, part of the controversial group of Thai elephants which were brought to Australia to become the zoo's big ticket item. Every zoo needs a big ticket item.
Well, you do need a big ticket item, otherwise people won't go.
Now, Greens MP Lee Rhiannon, who was a critic of the animals being brought out here in the first place, and I agree with her because I actually hate elephants, but anyway, she said that Thong Dee was underage.
Now, hang on, Coffin. You hate elephants. What, you've had a tangle with an elephant on a personal basis?
An elephant is an animal you can't have any rapport with.
Oh, don't
well,
be
you don't know that.
Don't
obviously.
You can't trust them.
Oh, come on.
That is ridiculous. The only reason
Why can't you trust them
is if you've been injurious to them. Elephants
injurious.
Don't forget, remember that.
Well, look.
Unlike us.
Lee Rhiannon came out and said it was that Thong Dee was far too young to be bearing a baby elephant.
Well, clearly not, because she's pregnant. If she was too young, she wouldn't have got pregnant.
Look, I mean, really, are we going to inject that whole thing onto the animal community, Coffin? And it's something you despise.
Look, I have to agree with her here, because she said that the pregnancy was a mistake resulting
didn't hear me
from
at all.
Poor management.
No, no, no.
Poor
my pregnancy was a mistake poor management. This is what they do with animals in zoos.
I was out at the zoo last week, a couple of weeks ago. Go,
I
right?
think we need to take a trip
went
to the zoo.
Animal to the elephant enclosure.
Yeah.
There were lots of kitties standing around.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the elephants were doing? They were just getting it on. Every one of them was like a mass orgy out there.
Don't be stupid.
Now you're
now you're bloody you're daydreaming.
Yeah.
You really are. You're hallucinating. You shouldn't be allowed into the zoo.
But this is where kids learn about the facts of life and the birds and the bees at the zoo.
Well, they've still got the old sign up there, elephant rides, and the elephants are certainly riding, but they're not riding.
Not riding. They're not letting kids ride them.
The
at least they're not riding kids.
The most important thing for elephants is to pair up, baby. And they paired
what
up.
What is it, one male to how many females there? What's the story?
I'm not too sure.
That
it's like a bloody harem.
Gung was the male in question that impregnated Thong Dee.
Thong Dee.
Thong Dee, her name is.
Well, the names are fairly sexy and provocative to begin with, aren't they? Yeah. You're on the Naked City,
anyway,
ladies and gentlemen.
The sting to that story is, of course, that we have to wait 22 months,
absolutely,
which is the gestation period.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before the
five have gone.
The baby elephant.
What is it?
Born.
June 2009.
Mm.
So we've got a ways to go.
What a furor there'll be about that, eh?
Why? Oh, well, what's the furor?
Not a furor, you know, there'll be like...
Oh, it'll be a leading news story for weeks. Yeah. God, and then they're going to want a name. Mm. They're going to have a big competition to name
Miss
it.
Death, and, oh, even if it is the leading news story, it'll actually bring some substance to a current affair, won't it? All right, well, look, Camille Harding, the beautiful Camille Harding, has entered into the studio. We should get her on the air in just a moment. The director, my God, she's worked hard to get that documentary to the screen.
I bet she has. Mm.
Big dreamers.
You're on the Naked City?
Of course you are.
Naked City, baby. You know you like it. It's the Naked City.
The Naked
Don't
City.
Turn your dial. Relax for a while. We have wonderful programs for you.
Ain't that the truth? Mm.
Brother's going to work it out. Now, the reason I played that track, Jay Katz, it was apparently played at one of the Barack Obama political rallies.
Oh, really?
Recently. And have you noticed Barack has hit the lead?
He's not going to win, I keep telling you.
Oh, Miss Death, don't bring us down. Let us have a bit of false hope for
Mark
a while.
Mark, you'll only be disappointed in the end.
Yeah.
Best to be disappointed now little bit, rather than a lot at the end.
Actually,
he's
Dorothy,
not going to win.
Dorothy,
she's going to win.
Dorothy Lessing.
All right, that's it. We'll talk at the end of the year.
Yeah, Dorothy Lessing, the British author and poet, she's a Nobel laureate. She won the Nobel Prize for Literature. She came out and said that if Barack was elected president, he would more than likely be assassinated.
Absolutely.
Which is a rather unfortunate thing to say.
And go back to work on Monday.
And,
you know that song?
Yeah, and she
elected
said it would be
Friday,
better that he stood as vice president. And, but anyway, we'll
maybe
see
she
happens.
Could get assassinated. I don't think that's going to happen either.
It's quite frightening over there when you think of all the palaver around the election.
But Willie Hutch, brother's going to work it out.
Beautiful
and,
song.
He may well do.
Absolutely. Oh, here's John. Isn't this astounding? I'll pop John into a seat. Miss Death, you could maybe introduce Camille here.
Yes. Welcome, Camille Harding.
Hard man.
Hard man, sorry. Where do I get that from? That's probably not reading the bio properly. That's probably where.
That's all right. Good morning, Ms. Death.
And, yes.
And Jay Katz and Coffin Air.
And Coffin Air, yes, yes. And John Fink has just...
And good morning, John Fink.
Yes.
Can you hear my ukulele?
You brought your own ukulele.
Whenever you do a radio interview, you have to bring a ukulele. Isn't that what it said in the press?
I did.
Well, yeah,
I did.
Okay. Yeah.
We had no idea you were performing with that tonight.
No.
It's not performing. It's just a prop.
It's just a prop. Hello, FBI viewers.
Yes. Now, listen, we're talking about an astounding documentary, a documentary we were actually floored by because we absolutely love. And it was on Roadside Australia, but really it had to concentrate itself on Tully. And I think you've both done a remarkable job here. Just tell us about this idea and how it came about, Camille.
As you know, it's not an original idea. Many people want to go and film big things.
All of us did.
I know.
But you know, the thing is, you never get to do it.
No.
And when someone like you does it, you realise, oh, my God, it's happened again.
Mm.
And we need to get off our asses and get motivated and do what you've done.
I know. It's funny when we start telling people, because everyone's like, oh, we've had that idea. We've had that idea.
Mm.
And so no one ever really took you serious or took us seriously in the beginning because everybody else had the idea.
Not telling the full story. This is how it happened, right? She's absolutely right. We were sitting down over breakfast and she said, you know what, I've always wanted to make a film about big things. And I thought, if I hear that one more time, I'm just going to absolutely kill someone. So I turned around and I said, all right, then, come on, let's go.
Let's do it.
That's actually
let's
the initial. And but,
so you're taking the credit for it, right?
No, she did all the work. Oh, I just drove the car.
Well, I don't know. It sounded awfully like it was because of me.
He said, let's go and do it. And then I said, yes, we actually should go and do it.
Okay.
So we did.
It was a dare.
Mm.
And look, you spend so much time in it. And these days, when I think of what you can get back as a documentary filmmaker, I think that no one should be making documentary films because they are the hardest, the most difficult, and financially, I mean, it's virtually suicide. Now, you spent 9 months of your life, evidently, in Tully, where the major
could
story
have had a baby
of this
in that
film
time.
Is set.
Well, I did.
Oh, well, there you go.
No, the film.
Oh, yes, okay. You did. Oh, sorry,
tell
God,
us,
we were actually believing that for a moment.
Tell us where Tully is, for starters. Yeah.
Tully is about halfway between Townsville and Cairns.
Nowhere.
Nowhere. People might know Mission Beach. It is a small sugar town. It is the biggest producer of sugar and bananas in Australia and also... has two other claims to fame. One is it has the highest historical record of the highest amount of rain ever.
7.98 meters.
And also, it is the UFO capital of
Australia. It's a saucer. Oh, well, that's 1966, Tully. It was a saucer nest. A great trace case.
Stories. They've been researched extensively, and there's some truth to those stories.
I believe. I've actually got all the photos.
Really? We would like to do an exchange with you over those, girl.
Bodily fluids, probably.
Miss Death, please.
Information. Yeah.
Did you guys settle into Tully for the 9 months of the making of the film?
We did. Beforehand, John and I actually filmed all the other big things starting from Sydney up the East Coast.
Can you give us a rundown of some of those?
Yeah. Oh, I can. Big banana, big pineapple, big orange, big mandarin, big peanut.
The big potato.
Oh. I'm just thinking up the East Coast. Where else? Big oyster, big prawn.
Big rig.
The big rig.
The big nothing.
What's a big nothing?
The big nothing is a set of concrete stairs leading up to
the nowhere.
Big
okay,
it's great. Beautiful. It's my favourite.
Of course.
And there's the big. Can I say the big cock?
We can say that on
rooster, isn't it?
Is it? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a
family show. We have lots of kids listening. Okay. Try and keep it clean. But she's talking about a rooster kid. Yeah, the boy chicken.
I am so happy that all those things were finally documented in a film. But you decided at some point there that you needed something else than just all the big things. Can you tell us about that?
What it was is we were filming everybody talking retrospectively.
Mm.
And it was exciting, but it wasn't so exciting. And the two main things that came out of it was town division and how it divided a town and what happened. And you know, people that were once friends were no longer friends, and with people who avoid each other in supermarkets.
And this happened with the construction of all these big things.
The majority of them, yes.
Mm.
Because
whiz.
It's a small town.
Especially
and it's
with
a
the
big
cult.
Human
because
drama.
That's right, and it becomes a signifier for that town. And a lot of people don't want a big thing as a signifier for their town.
Mm. Yeah, okay, so you've got to just look at it this way, right? There's 160 big things in Australia, okay? And most of them, 99.9% of them, it's an apple, it's an orange, it's a pineapple, it's a lobster.
It's rather bland.
Yeah. It is primary produce.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
Ah, what does that say about Australia? We're an island. We've got to really make a lot of our own goods, and we get a bunch of people, Italians, whatever the latest migrant intake is, and they come and they go, oh, crikey, this country is so bloody big. What am I going to do? I better make an icon to the, you know...
to draw people there.
To the god of oranges, because if I don't, my freaking orange field's going to die. And they build these massive things. So think about it. What if Armageddon came and, you know, we all covered in dust, and in 1,000 years some aliens came and they dug us up and they dug up Australia and they go, crikey, there was some religion here to do with primary produce.
That worshipped the big
temples.
Fruit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The second thing that that happens in these small towns is when one of these big things are built, it's actually a prototype, so there's always complete dramas with building it. Mm. And it's usually the local plumber or the builder or anyone in town decides the artist, they can all do it.
Yeah.
And what starts off as a $10,000 project,
majority of time blows out
to a $90,000 project, and again creates more town division.
Of course.
So when a friend of ours rang us up and said, look, on the front page of one of the newspapers, there's a small town in far north Queensland building the world's biggest gumboot. And, John and I went, beauty, let's go up there.
That's the story.
And it's all going to be in real time, and we'll see the dramas before
unfold.
Us.
Yep. Beautiful.
Is the gumboot related to their rainfall, is it?
Yes.
Right. Mm. In 1950, they had the highest rainfall.
They call it a pretty wet place.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And how big is this gumboot?
It's big.
That's it.
It's the same as the rainfall of that year, 7.93 metres.
You can climb up the stairs.
Yeah.
And have
they did
the
put a spiral staircase in there?
In the middle.
Right, okay.
Which was a big hoover louver.
Yes, I know. They weren't going to do it.
That's always a big plus with big things if you can actually get up inside them, isn't it?
I love getting up inside a big thing and having a look around and all of that. But it leads to sort of the mechanics of town politics, which is beautiful.
Mm.
This film's all about it. And Camille's done a great job being very sensitive about picking people up, because they can't help being funny. This film has been described as a cross between The Castle and Kenny. Now, Kenny's a mockumentary.
Yes.
Right.
And The Castle was written out of a script and it was shot, right, like a feature film. This is actually real life.
It's it come
These
to life.
These guys are really doing
Absolutely.
It.
And
that's the beauty of the film. In many ways, it sensitively follows that human drama. And there are divisions everywhere, but they're absolutely absurd and hilarious. And they're real-life divisions. I mean, you've got the two artists primarily, one with the frog.
Well, one's an engineer.
One with the gumboot. Tell us a little bit about that. Gee whiz, and you followed that story from woe to go. You seemed to capture every second of that drama.
Oh, and there was even more that we couldn't put in. look, those two guys are funny. I mean, I became very close with Roger Chandler, with Brian Newell. Roger's just this frenetic character. You just can't pin him down. And constantly on
he
the
was
go...
The artist, he was the artist, wasn't he? He did the frog.
Oh, my God. I mean, I love Roger, but... Oh, and everyone finds him, a difficult character.
He's ducking and weaving all the time, isn't he?
Constantly. Yeah. And they love him in Rotary because he comes up with 50 million ideas, but also he's the person that just... I can't even begin to explain what Roger's like because he's just constantly frenetic.
What about Ron's description?
Oh, you...
Yeah, Ron says, well, is it in the film? I don't think we put it in there. Ron said to us on camera, we didn't put it in. He says, Roger's a bit like putting eggs in a wet paper bag. You never know when the bottom's going to fall out.
Right.
Yeah. Perfect. So appropriate.
Have you shown this film to the people of Tully? Has it had a premiere up there?
We did, and we thought we were going to get lynched. Mm-hmm. No, they absolutely loved it. We were really surprised. Mm. We went up there. We got quite a few people to turn up. I think about 150 of the townsfolk turned up. Mm. The other, it was also coincided with some Townsville football game. And then the next morning, we got a huge, because we stayed at Ron's place, a huge amount of people calling up saying, why didn't you tell us it was so bloody funny? We would have turned up.
Yeah, which is... Now this is the thing. Documentary equals boring.
Of course.
I mean, so many people's minds, documentary, expecting, the voice of God to turn up. God gets a lot of work in the 70s and the 80s, but probably from the 50s through to the 70s, God got a lot of work doing voiceovers.
Mm.
I don't know what he's doing now, but I mean... this is the two-toed penguin. Yeah. You know, and it's like, there's not like that. This is funny, and there's a lot of funny documentaries out there now. Yeah. It's all about interacting with the audience and presenting life, holding a mirror up, all of that sort of stuff.
That probably actually worked for us in the end because we sold, I think, nearly 300 DVDs.
Fantastic.
That is brilliant.
So everyone wanted to see it and paid us for it, so it was good.
Great. I think it's once it gets the wider community get to see it, I think it's actually going to be a tourist call for Tully. I can see that about this film. You know, it's going to get people back on the road.
Well, we've just Qantas are just going to put it on their in-flight entertainment,
and
which
so
is
they
cool.
should.
Mm.
And so they should.
Are we going to get a TV release here, or
ABC TV as well? But we don't want to talk about that because we've got our big Sydney premiere.
No, you need to see it with an audience, people.
And
stop with
the
TV and the DVD thing. All right, get out there and interact with other people.
And that's the only way you can make a bit of money after. I mean, how do you survive making documentaries? You don't, do you?
No, I was about to say you don't.
I mean, you were telling me outside that you were living on like a box of produce that was brought to you each week to help you through.
That's right. I was really lucky that the people of Tully didn't actually take me too seriously for one, and felt really sorry for me that there was this feral girl running around with a camera. So I lived. They volunteered a shed in the cane fields for me, which is an open shed, didn't even have doors, and put a camper trailer van there, and then every week they'd deliver oranges and fruit and vegetables, and lucky I was a vegetarian at this time as well, and it suited me quite well. So there weren't really a great load of expenses except petrol.
Right, getting around.
Mm.
I think that's one of the things that came across in the documentary to me is just, I could tell that you were actually part of that community in the end. You don't end up with such a real, sensitive, true life telling of these tales unless you've gone and lived in that community.
Unless you feel it.
Yeah, so to me it's more than the Diane Arbus equation you've got there, Camille. It kills me, this doco, and people have to see it. This week it's the premiere, the first screening at the Open Air Cinema.
In Bondi. Yes.
In Bondi.
Yeah,
that's
and that's Wednesday night, is it?
That's right,
Wednesday
20th.
And what time?
7:30.
Well, the doors open at 6:15, 6:30.
And they want you to get in there, drink
a bit
lots
of
booze.
Music, you sit there, watch the view.
Get all,
You know,
apparently really groovy live music, by the way. Really groovy live music.
Fantastic.
Well,
it's
I don't know
good.
About groovy, but it's live.
Now, you guys are a great team. Now, what else is going to be coming? You know, what's the next big thing on the horizon after this, Doco?
Well, we're doing one on crocodile hunters after meeting a man who... The biggest crocodile in the world is based on a lady called Chris Pavlovsky. She actually holds the world record. That's another Australian feat for us, which is probably
we're too proud of.
Shooting the world's largest croc.
Shooting
the world. That's what I'm saying. It's not really a record.
I haven't heard anything about her.
Oh, no,
they're very famous.
They're an
actually.
Interesting couple. They're fantastic.
She shot it, did she?
This is a real saga, and these two lived it.
Okay.
And it's just fantastic. It's a very, very powerful and emotional.
He's selling it, people.
No. I got to tell you.
The quick synopsis is two Polish immigrants who came separately from escaping Nazi Germany, came out to Australia and became very famous.
No wonder she's shooting crocs.
Crocodile hunters. Yes, that's right.
God, amazing.
So there you go.
Sounds good. Can't wait to see that.
So are we going to get a little tune on the ukulele or?
Come on. Do you want me to sing you a song?
Yeah, sure.
I wrote this song last night.
He's done this before.
He was the backup guy for Tiny Tim years ago. That's right. Yeah.
This is a song about a boy who lives on an island. He goes, how does it go? I can't remember how it goes. Hang on. Here we go. I'm getting prodded. Wait a minute. Here we go.
You've gone through years of this, Camille, haven't you?
There was a boy. He lived on an island. Somewhere between the moon and the sea. And one day this boy went traveling on a journey to find you and me. And one day he was sitting in a garden. When out tumbled a girl from a tree. She said, oh dear, excuse me, I beg your pardon. He said, come fly away with me.
Drugs.
Come fly away with me. He said, come fly. He said, come fly. He said, come fly.
Stuttering.
Away with me.
The news.
Now, Miss Death, I believe you have actually been to the Mary Costa Kidder School of News Reading this week. Is that true? Brushing up on a few.
Say that about my wife.
Well, I mean, her slips are honest.
I stuff
they're,
it up badly.
They're real. They're real.
But I'm always trying to getting as much as I can.
You don't. And you know, they tell you that news reading is live. It's edited to hilt. They're reading off a teleprompter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's no human
in
them at all.
Voice, is it?
No,
yeah.
It's not.
There's
somebody. It's dubbed.
So, that's right.
Totally
they
dubbed.
So I think dump that school. And just go for it, Miss Death. Be yourself.
Okay. I will be. I can't be anybody but myself.
That's why I love you.
China bans
ghosts. You're one of the big things
from
in this
the net.
Country.
If people didn't interrupt me, I might get a bit of reading.
Right. Sorry.
China bans ghosts from the net. China has added ghosts, monsters and other things to go, that go bump in the night to its list of banned video and audio content on an intensified crackdown ahead of the Beijing Olympics. Producers have around 3 weeks to look through their tapes of for horror and report it to the authorities, the General Administration of Press and Publication said in a statement posted on the government website. Offending content included wronged spirits, violent ghosts, monsters, demons, and other inhuman portrayals, strange and supernatural storytelling for the sole purpose of seeking terror and horror.
Basically anything that Steven Spielberg had brought along.
Absolutely. Mm. The new guidelines aim to control and cleanse the negative effect these items have on society and to prevent horror, violent, cruel publications from entering the market through official channels and to protect adolescents' psychological health. What about their human rights record? When are they going to clean that up?
Well, that's an important thing.
There's the horror and the violence.
Pulled out, of course, now.
Yes, he has. Mm. But if these people want to clean their act up before they ask other people to start cleaning their act up, don't you think?
Yes.
Okay, space gun. Astronauts aboard the International Space Station apparently have access to a gun. Russian cosmonauts carry a gun on their Soyuz space capsule, which is attached to the space station. Every spacecraft carries survival gear for crash landings, and the Russian Soyuz has a kit that includes a gun.
Why?
A photo, because you can kill the aliens with it. A photo of a space tourist using one version of the weapon is posted on his website. But although the gun has been there for as long as the space station has been in orbit, its existence is kept quiet. NASA and Russian officials won't talk publicly about it. Former NASA engineer Jim Oberg, who is an author and journalist, wrote about the gun on his website. He said the gun has no place in an environment where people are under such high stress. I'm amazed not... You know, not a a spree shooting in space has gone on. A
couple of bottles of vodka and God knows
where you go. Shoot the damn place up. Yeah.
Water down with
while you're on things space, what about that satellite that Americans are going to shoot?
It's the new Skylab.
Yeah, they're going to shoot it down. Where are they shooting it down over?
You know, my theory is that there's a couple of monkeys in that.
You reckon?
Well, I mean, there's several theories as to what's in there, isn't there?
Well, if it's a spy satellite, I reckon there's some sensitive information in there.
Well, that's the biggest theory of them all.
Well, that's not a theory.
Radioactive contaminants like Skylab had in there.
Why?
And they brought it down in Australia. They're going to bring it down on us again.
Why would it be a theory? It's a spy satellite. Spy satellites gather sensitive information.
Okay, let's dump the theory. It's fact.
Absolutely. Come on, people. Wake up to yourselves. 44 shots. Two bartenders were convicted of grievous bodily harm by a Berlin state court on Monday for their role in serving at least 44 shots of tequila to a 16-year-old German boy who died after the drinking binge.
Mm. Oh, boy.
Mm. It was that 16th shot that did it. Up until then, he was fine.
Should have gone for the space gun.
Rape tax. Rape victims across the states are paying for their ill fortune in the most tangible of ways. A bill for the evidence kit needed to lock up the rapist. Rape victims are being treated differently than any other victim of crime, said Monica Johnson Holster, executive director of the North Carolina.
Is that a gun in your pocket, or just
that's the one?
Me? Yeah.
Of the North Carolina Coalition Against Sexual Assault, the country doesn't charge for fingerprinting if my house gets broken into. Trauma, then a bill. A Charlton County woman, who reported being raped on her 21st birthday in September, never imagined she'd get a bill for enduring a four-hour exam at the emergency department at Central Carolina Hospital in Sanford. But 6 weeks after a specially trained nurse searched her body for a trace of the man she said raped her, a bill arrived. For the nurse's trouble and time in the exam room, she owed $175, her share, after her parents' private insurance paid some of the bill, she said. For months, she ignored the bill. Late notices piled up. A few weeks ago, another bill arrived, $193 for the doctor's care that day. So there you go.
Oh, my Lord.
Rape victims just keep on paying. Steve Gerber, creator of Howard the Duck, is dead.
Really?
At 60. Mm. Serves him right. What a disgraceful thing. Mr. Gerber created Howard the Duck, the dour dyspeptic, utterly disagreeable and therefore widely popular comic book hero of the 70s.
He also gave his name to a brand of baby food.
Howard the Duck.
Gerber.
Mr. Gerber. Okay, Roy Schreiber. Roy Schreiber died. Schreiber.
Schreiber.
How did he die, Mr.
Schreiber?
Just
Roy. The Jaws guy.
Roy died.
He did, 75. He was
Schreiber. Wasn't Schreiber.
Oh, quickly, Christian. What about Howard the Duck?
Sorry, if you guys only know Howard the Duck from the George Lucas film, you're completely missing a classic 70s satirical comic.
Yeah, I know the one.
And Steve Gerber gets short shrift for that sort of thing. He's a real innovator. He's one of the guys who brought underground comic sensibility into the mainstream.
Well, he's dead now.
Yeah, I know. Mm. Created Man-Thing.
Man-Thing?
Man-Thing. He's okay. Like Swamp Thing, only he's a Man-Thing.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Good-o. Yes?
What happened to poor Roy?
Roy, he's dead. 75.
Shark
Jaws
attack.
Finally got him. And Mr. Schreiber was a stage actor with a background in the classics who became one of the leading figures in the American film Renaissance. That wasn't an American film, Renee. That was the downfall of film, Jaws.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was
God.
The summer blockbuster.
That's right. And, of course, Smokey Dawson. Toast.
Any dirt on Roy, Christian? No, any dirt on Roy Schreiber?
He was actually half shark. Sort of a military breeding program.
Right. Okay. Thank you. You got that off a... electronic game from the 70s.